Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Preacher's Forum podcast. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. I'm coming to you from The Rock on a beautiful sunny day here in North Wales in the United Kingdom, where I've lived with my wife, Lisa, for the last almost 12 years now. And so it's a great day here in Great Britain. Today's episode, I have to say, is one of the most powerful, heart-rending, but ultimately heartwarming and inspirational stories that I've ever had a chance to be a part of. It's an interview that I did a few weeks back with a former student of mine. Her name is Jean Dobson, and I wanted to bring her in as part of this Mind Shift series. This is a story of surviving multiple sexual abuse. It is raw, it's unfiltered, but Jean tells it like it is. And you know, I first met Jean and her husband Phil several years back when they were first-year students of mine way up in Liverpool when I was teaching Bible and theology. And one of the things I noticed about Jean, she's the sweetest lady you could ever want to meet, was that she would allude to the fact that she had been a victim of abuse in her past, but it was clearly a raw, very sensitive subject, and she wouldn't talk about it, but you definitely knew that there had been some issues in her past. And I'm so proud of Jean, because now several years later and going through the help that she's gone through, and I have to say I'm humbled that she talks about in this episode, I played a little part in helping her deal with her emotions and her past. And that's just a fantastic story, which you'll hear more about in a minute. But the fact that she sat down with me for nearly an hour and opened up her heart and talks about her past, and it's horrific, it's terrible, but she's come out of it as a stronger, better, more self-aware person who is in a position now to help other victims of abuse. And so it's an amazing story. You're not going to want to miss this episode. So I don't want to spend too much time talking about it. Let's get right into the conversation with Jean Dobson. I will talk about how you can contact me on social media and so forth after the interview with Jean. So without further ado, I'm going to give you my conversation with Jean Dobson as part of my Mind Shift series here on the Preacher's Forum podcast. All right, everybody, welcome to the Preacher's Forum podcast. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, and I'm coming to you once again from literally the heart of Liverpool. I am sitting next to Jean Dobson. Do you want to say hi to everybody, Jean?
Hi, everybody.
This is Jean Dobson. She was one of my students when I was a teacher, and we become good friends, her and her husband Phil, over the years. And this story that Jean has is going to be unbelievably powerful. This is part of the Mind Shift series that I'm doing now. And we've covered a lot of different topics. We've covered the power of positivity, creating a healthy leadership culture, Theoclasms with Gary Hayes. And I'm getting into this story with Jean in a minute here, where she's going to talk about being a sexual abuse survivor as a child and how she has undergone a shift and being able to deal with that and come out of that and become the person that she's in the process of becoming. It's an incredibly powerful story, and I'm sure that a lot of people out there listening will identify or draw strength or inspiration from Jean's story. I just want to say before we start, this is the Preacher's Forum podcast. You can contact me a variety of different ways on social media, and I'll talk about that a little bit more at the end of the show. And you can also support me on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. If you go to patreon.com/preachersforum, you'll find out more information about supporting the work of the Preacher's Forum. But I want to get right into this conversation with Jean. Now, we were originally going to do this as part of the British Accent series. And in fact, Jean and I did a podcast interview, didn't we? When was it? About a month or two ago.
Yeah, a month or two ago, yes, in a coffee bar.
It was the same day that we did our conversation, Gary and I, on the first time we talked about what a theoclasm is. Right after I recorded Gary, Jean and her husband came in. But unfortunately, there were so many customers, as they say in Britain, queuing up. We would say lining up. but it was just too loud. And I was devastated when I went back home and listened to the recording, because it was a great interview. But what I thought, maybe all these things happen for a reason, don't they, Gene? We have to be ready to flow with it and roll with it. We don't know why these things happen, but today Gene has graciously decided to come down to Liverpool and do this other episode with me, this Mind Shift series. And what I wanted to talk about was your sexual abuse surviving, your experiences. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of your story? You were born and raised in Liverpool, isn't that right?
Yes, in Aintree, yes. Not far from where I'm living now, yeah.
Right.
So Liverpool born and bred.
So you're Liverpool born and bred. Can you tell us a little bit about your kind of family upbringing? Would you say it was a healthy kind of functional home, or slightly less than functional?
It was, I guess, family life. Maybe we all have a picture in our minds of what family life is, which can be a bit of a myth because it's whatever it is. And it was very mixed. Lived at home with my parents, my brother, my grandparents, and very mixed messages about life from two different rooms under one roof. So it was a little bit confusing, but certainly there was some love there. And that, I guess that was the main thing.
Yeah, it's good to have some love. What were the mixed messages you're referring to? What are the stories you're hearing?
Different stories were my nan, who was a very kind, gracious lady, and she was the one who told me about God. And I'm here today, I guess, because of his grace. And she told me about a God that she knew. It wasn't just someone that you read about, but she had a relationship. And she told me that he was good and all that he did was good. So that was the great message. And my nan encouraged me to go to church, to go to Sunday school. I came home enthusiastic. Surprise, surprise. My mum goes, "Don't bring that religious nonsense home here." Didn't want to know.
Really? So you're literally hearing the almost exact opposite. So were you gravitating more toward the loving God of your grandmother and less from what you're hearing? But clearly your mother is an authority figure. So that must have been a conflicted situation, wasn't it?
It was, because my mum had very strong character and actually ruled the roost in our home. And it's been a journey that I've been on, really trying to understand, because my nan was so kind, why my mum was so different. And I discovered through a long journey of prayer, there was a lot of pain in her life, in her heart. And yeah, so that was another journey and part of a different testimony.
Yeah, and it's unfortunately the case, isn't it true, so many times that people that themselves are hurting, they say hurting people hurt other people, you know. So I can testify from my own upbringing, you know, our family life was, we were a fairly like Christian fundamentalist background, you know. So we were raised without a television. We weren't allowed to listen to secular music, rock and roll. And my parents were raising us in a very conservative, evangelical, almost fundamentalist context. So we were sheltered from the world. That was sort of our upbringing, you know, and yet what's happened in our family, and I'll get more into this in a minute, is, you know, there's been some very disturbing revelations that have come out from this nice Christian home, you know, that had this lovely veneer of respectability. My dad was an elder in the church. He was a leader. He played the piano. He you know, led worship. And yet he was involved in a lot of things that came out very late in his life that we had no idea, you know. And this is obviously one of the big stories of sexual abuse survivors, isn't it?
Yes.
People that abuse are very good at hiding things from people who are right there.
Yes.
They're incredibly devious and sneaky, and they can do things and nobody, and that's why they get away with it so much
yes.
of the time, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And I think one of the hardest things to come to terms with, the people often that hurt us the most are the people that we love. And it's very hard to face the fact that someone you love has actually hurt you or harmed you. It's a biggie to get over. It was for me.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't get over it.
Mm.
They really don't, do they? Because from what I've been aware of, something like 75% of people who abuse were themselves abused. So a vast majority, if it's not dealt with, if they don't receive counseling and help and other things, they can just carry on themselves and become abusers.
Yes, absolutely. And the abuser can also, it's like a personality transfer, because as they've abused you, and our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit, they can leave deposits which begin to manifest in our own personality. And for me, it's only the grace of God and the working of the Holy Spirit that can bring release, plus the ability to share one with another. And I'm going to set this point, and I might embarrass Dr. Haycock, but it's the kindness in Clint's voice. I hear a kindness from his heart. Outwardly, you might think he's completely outrageous, but actually, he's such a kind man. And it's his kindness and his challenges that have come my way that have stimulated my thinking and helped me go through a process that's really got to the bottom of the abuse in my life. So I'm really thankful to him for that.
Wow, that's great, Jean. I had no idea. But it's true, and that's what this whole thing is about. It's this mind shift. It's not necessarily confronting in a confrontational way. Mm. It's just encouraging people to think issues through and being supportive, I guess. And ultimately, as I look at it, isn't that what the church is supposed to be?
Absolutely.
It's supposed to be a supportive community. And unfortunately, so much of the time, well, in my family's case, the abuser was right in the middle of the church. He was a leader of the church for years and years and years. And so not only was it not a supportive and safe place, it was an unsafe place.
Yes. I mean, I can say that myself. Not so much, but abuse can come in different ways, and the abuse of authority. And I would say some of my experience in church life has been people who have authority, but actually they've not, for me, manifested the heart of the servant king, who is the builder of the church. So they don't manifest, they don't express it. And so if we come under that kind of authority, it actually can be like a weight on our own spiritual life and our own personal development and growth. And again, I was challenged by Dr. Haycock one time. He did an exercise at college. We had to list gifts, and I listed all the different gifts I knew that God had used me in. And Clint asked me a question, and I thought, yeah, what's wrong with me? Because I know God's used me in all of these ways, but underneath was a very, I realise now, confused person. Mm-hmm. Because in my mind, I'd accepted things about myself, curses that had been rained down on my life, and they were still resonant in my mind. So at one level, we talk about strongholds. Until God exposes them, we don't really know what they are. It's a word. Until God reveals that you've got a stronghold that tells you you can't do this, that tells you you've got to do this. And it's only the grace of God brings down those strongholds. I'm actually free now. I am at college in my second year. I found myself. I realized who I really was, not the person I'd learned to be. I'd learned to be what anyone wanted me to be, to do whatever was required of me, that in church, you were valued by what you did, not by who you are. And I think the church has missed good style, because Jesus came. God's heart is that we become like him. And it's not about what we do, but who we become like.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I remember many times, and I think Jean and the other students got tired of hearing me say, if you're a big toe, be the best big toe you can be.
Yes.
If that's who God's made you to be, become who you are. Become who the person that God made you to be. Because so much of the time, and it's not just in church, is it? It's our society. There's a lot of messages. You have to look like Kim Kardashian or whoever it is. And if you don't look like that, if you don't fit the mold physically or whatever, you're not valued. You know,
yes.
And that's, you're not valued for who you are.
Yes.
You know, rather than what you can do for somebody or what you look like.
Yes. And in fact, I was reading 1 Corinthians 12 last week, saw something I'd never seen before about the gifts. The one that you seem the least likely is the one that's most valued. We all say the mouthpiece or the ears or the hands that are doing, but what about the little toe? What about the little finger? But actually, if we read 1 Corinthians 12, it shows that God actually honors those more.
Yeah,
we've all got
true.
To work together. And the big voice or the big ears or the big hands can't do without the little fingers and the little toes. So I think we need to have a whole re-look at the body of Christ and what it really means for the body to function, not to support an institution and an activity going on in a building.
Yeah, one of my favorite translations of 1 Corinthians 12 is from the Message.
Right.
And I tend to read that in class because I love that section when we get to the spiritual gifts part, because in the Message he says, you know, the body, we spend so much of our time on external appearance.
Yes.
We primp our hair, we do our makeup if you're a woman, or maybe some men do, I don't know, guy liner. But, you know, but it says you can do without hair, you can do without ears, you can do without eyes, but you can't do without a stomach.
Yes.
You can't live without a heart. You know, and those parts of the body that we seem, you know, we don't pay as much attention to, they're actually more important. You need them to live. And so every part of the body is important. But unfortunately, so much of the time in churches, the message is, well, this is a sort of a one size fits all. You have to look like this person or act like that and be something or someone that you're not.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, even coming here today, I left this morning. My husband was in a whirlwind, so I was whizzed into the car, dropped off at church. I'd got none of my jewellery, my wedding ring, etc., etc. I'm in an old dress, doing the Barbie, and I suddenly realised I'm going to run out of time to get changed to come down for this podcast. And I thought, does it matter? I'm just going as I am.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you are who you are.
Yes.
If this is the way it is, if you get judged for your personal appearance or whatever, then we're in the wrong place.
We are. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, Phil and I realized last week, we've been married 28 years this August, been in leadership all our lives. And you know, this last week has just been fantastic. Free to be ourselves. With not the weight of responsibility yoked to Christ is easy, his burden is light. But fulfilling the expectations of authority is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I thought one time I had friends and I could have fun. And then I thought, wow, where did all that fun go? Because these are the rules. These are what you have to follow to be a good leader. This is what you've got to do. And I'm so blessed. The church where Phil and I are, which became my placement church, is now my church. I'm actually in a place, I guess because Phil and I are no longer church leaders, but we're free to be ourselves. We sat in the garden last night after Phil had been at band practice, and it was just lovely to chill and have a laugh.
Yeah.
And I'd forgotten what it was like.
Yeah. I know. We get so busy, especially in church leadership, keeping all the plates spinning, that you burn out, you get exhausted, and you think, wait a minute, where's the fun in any of this?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't understand.
Yes.
It's a crazy, and they're projecting all these expectations on us as leaders.
Yes.
That are oftentimes unrealistic and impossible to meet, really.
Yes.
You know, and you're in that performance trap again, aren't you?
Yeah, and it's never what Jesus intended. It's a mind shift, because we can read scripture with a particular mindset. And so we interpret scripture, and it's only the Holy Spirit that reveals truths to us. And sets us free. And I do believe across the globe, we see the world in so much turmoil. The church is his answer. And I do believe God is doing a stirring up. He's breaking down the old ground, that fresh life can emerge, because he is so lovely. I have so much fun. I really love him. Not because I've been trained to, but I know that he loves me. And even when I've made mistakes in life, which I had, inevitably, if you're under authority, you go through a time of rebellion. And for me, that time of rebellion, I used to read the Ten Commandments and think, that's me finished. My dad would say, as long as you keep the Ten Commandments, and I knew I hadn't. And because of their authority, I thought, that's me finished.
Yeah, I'm done now.
Yeah.
So what happens then? Yeah. You don't want to be under that yoke, the burden of, you know, I've apparently disappointed God. I let God down.
Yes.
I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to live up to his requirements, because there's a whole lot more in the Bible besides the Ten Commandments.
That's right.
You couldn't even get out of the book of Exodus, Jean. I mean, you were stuck in the Ten Commandments.
I have been. And that has been my frustration, I think. Because in my heart, I thought I'd let my parents down. But equally, in my heart, I led them both to the Lord. But because of that authority that was not imposed, but I came under in the family home, I could never fulfill their requirements. So there was this kind of inner frustration because I knew I was free in God, but in my mind, I'd let my parents down and there was no way forward. So that's another stronghold that God's brought down in my mind. And I've just had such joy recently because I feel the love that I had in my heart to my mum and dad is there. They're with him. And actually, the last hours of my mum's life, this is the extent to which abuse started in my life. My mum was in hospital on the Friday. On the Monday morning, a consultant came and said, your mum's just got a few hours left. And you know what I thought to myself? Thank God she'll never hurt me again. And I know my mum would have been devastated. She may know by now. But I know she was a wounded soul. And by God's grace, he's administered into her life the things that I couldn't do. I'm trusting that he's done for me.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, to hear that sentiment and to think, I should feel guilty for that, but maybe you don't, you know? I mean,
no.
When my father passed away a few years ago, I mean, I had already kind of reconciled myself to it. I didn't go to the funeral, and that was, I mean, you know, you think, wait a minute, this is your father that's passed away. And I just, to me, it was something that I had to deal with, and that was a mind shift for me was, you know, when all the things came out about what was going on in my family, it was sexual abuse and allegations of other things that came out. You know, I tried to hold my family together and I tried to reconcile some of my siblings, but it kind of blew up in my face. Well, it did blow up in my face. And it was about to destroy me about 3 or 4 years ago. And I was really angry and I was really upset going around. And I was really struggling. And I had to realize that I had to walk away from very toxic people. And, you know, I love them. I care about them. I just can't be in relationship with them because it was so unhealthy. And I was expending so much emotional energy dealing with unhealthy and toxic people that was part of me being free. And I feel like you, when you described, you know, having fun, you know, I've looked at the last, you know, 10 or 15 years and I've said, where's the fun? Where's the joy? I've been driving myself so hard to please somebody, whether it's God or I was still trying to please my dad. I mean, that was a huge revelation I had back when I was in Bible college over 20 years ago. I was trying to get good grades and really work hard. And I was in my mind, I was still that little boy going, you know, I need you to like me, daddy, you know. And he wasn't this taskmaster that was, you know, cracking the whip, but I wanted to please him.
Yes.
You know, it's just an amazing thing how those things, like you say, that life script can still, even though I was in my mid-20s at the time, I had a family, I was married, I'd been out of the home for years, I was still working under that sort of, that mindset.
Yes. I think as well, you know, we have a picture of that which is perfect. The conflict in my home from childhood was my nan painted a picture of perfection, but that's what she saw in her heart. What I experienced was something different. But my nan was always kind of revered in the family because she was gentle. And if there were any problems, people would come to her. She'd always have a kind word. And it was almost she was set up as the benchmark. And none of us could match that. And that's another mind shift that I've had. Sometimes we know things, but we've got stuff hidden in our minds that's contrary, that we have an expectation of perfection, but we're all work in progress. There's nothing perfect. The only perfect one is God himself. And I think it's coming to terms with our, we know the one who is perfect. We're work in progress. And I also feel, Clint, you know, that God's is putting us in right relationships where we've been put in boxes. You've got to serve out in this church or that church. I've got friends like yourself across the patch, and whenever we meet, we have good fellowship.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
And that's God. Yeah. That's God expressed himself on the earth. It's not through buildings and it's not through institutions, but God is love. So surely when we see love released, we can encourage one another. As Clint has really encouraged me because he's provocative but I know he's got a kind heart. So it's always stimulated my thinking, and that's where I am now because I've had a mind shift. My mind is open, and I'm enjoying life as I did before I came into church leadership.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how much you want to get into this, but can we go back a little bit? Mm. Are you willing to describe some of the situations that happened when you were a young girl?
Yes.
With your abuse? Because I'm thinking, I know there's going to be people listening to this that are themselves sexual abuse survivors, but maybe haven't had the opportunity to go through any counseling or help, and they're struggling with moving on. How do you help people? Because the gene that I'm hearing now, you know, you're having fun. This is not a person who is, you know, beaten down and allowing these unfortunate things that have happened in your past to destroy you, which they very easily could have.
Oh, absolutely.
It happens to a lot of people.
Mm. Actually, last week after listening to Gary's second podcast on his theoclasm, a couple of days later, I thought, I hate myself. And then God took me through why. Because I'd failed myself, my own expectations. And I think within sexual abuse, what happens is the abuser exerts their authority over the vulnerable, but actually the vulnerable carries the guilt, and it's really hard. The only way I have been free of that is God at work in my life. He is the divine healer. He is the one that has touched my heart. And recent memories that he started to clear from my first time I was abused was someone who married into the family. Married a great aunt, and I was at their home. I used to visit every Saturday, and she fell asleep, draws the curtains, sits me on his knee, physical abuse, don't tell anyone what I've done. Right away, I obviously, because I'm intimidated, I won't tell anyone, but I then become in alignment with him. There's a spiritual agreement, and that opened the door to ongoing abuse, not through him necessarily. Then the abuse took place at important stages in my life, stages of growth. So I can say of the devil, of the enemy, he came to destroy me without question of a doubt. And it's possibly because my first revelation is of God who is love, then a mum who curses my life in a fit of temper, and then probably between about 7, 8, a great uncle then abuses me sexually and says, don't tell anyone. That, I believe, opened an agreement with the powers of darkness to move in on my life, which they did. At 11, I just passed my 11 plus, great milestone, and I got a place at the top, what was the top girls' grammar school, thought it was way beyond me, got a place, go to the local shop to buy sweets for everyone. On the way home, a man stops me. Can you tell me the way to such and such? Drags me down an entry. And, well, when I say drags, he's talking to me. So I'm distracted. I don't know what he's up to. Next thing, he abused me, exposed himself, committed a sexual act, and then laughed in my face. And I screamed in horror. But you can imagine your first encounter of a sexual encounter when it's someone who is a pervert. You can imagine what that, I could have only recently been able to let go of actually what I saw and what he did. It traumatized me. And that's another area. It's not so much the acts that people do, but it's the trauma, because we have emotions as well as our mind. And I believe I've been trapped by these painful emotions and what I've seen from a man who was clearly a porno. Probably about 12, 13, I'm going to youth club. A man runs behind me and attacks me from behind, puts his hand up my clothes, and then runs off. So imagine, so even a place which is a safe place for me, church, youth club, going out to meet friends, my mum didn't know what had happened, but she said every Friday night she'd hear me running up our road because I was terrified of someone coming behind me and doing the same thing again. Couple of years later, I'm at school, get at grammar school, on the bus. It was like a 5-mile journey into Liverpool. A man sits next to me, raincoat over his hand up my clothes, And I am petrified because I can't say anything. I actually was able to tell my grandmother, and it was the first time I was able to speak about anything. It was the only thing I shared, but I tell my nan what had happened. She told my mum, they phoned the school. It turns out he was doing the same thing to another girl. The police were involved. They caught him and he had to go to court. Now, my friend and I had to go to court. So bear in mind, I'm about 15. So there were formative years of my life, 7, 11, just past. And the future was looking bright, you know. I got placed at the top grammar school in Liverpool. Abused, traumatised. And then we had to go to court in case this guy didn't plead guilty, which he did. Said it was his first offence. But actually, being in court when you're a young girl, and it is intimidating. Men who are perverts, you know, it's a word until you've come under a perverted act. And so he pleaded guilty and he was given some kind of, you know, sentence. And my last encounter was I just turned 21. So you can see how the enemy tried to destroy me as a little girl, each of the formative years, and I'm coming into being a woman, 21 years of age. There was a guy at work, a friend and I helped him. He was going through a divorce and he was drinking heavily. And we said to him, look, you know, this is not the way. We befriended him. We invited him to our social group on occasions. Then he kept asking me out, and like everything within me said no. A man going through divorce, emotional wreck, but he kept pestering me. And I was a keen fan of Roy Orbison at the time, and he was appearing Preston at one of the theatres there. He said, oh, I'd like to take you. You know, you've been so kind to me. So I gave in against my better judgment. Takes me on the night out. It was like a cabaret type place. Have a few drinks. Stop the car on the way home. Rapes me. And that was me finished. I really thought I am finished as a woman. And it's only, I ran away. I got a promotion at work. And I moved to work in London. And God spoke to me about forgiving that man. It was a long time, you know, it was a few years before I was able to. I'd come back to Liverpool. I got another post in Liverpool. And he was still at work. He'd just retired, but I got in touch with him. No, he hadn't quite retired. He was coming up to retirement. God's perfect timing. So before he'd retired, I was able to meet up with him to let him know that I'd forgiven him. And I actually met up with him and his second wife a few years later, working in the health service. I didn't recognise him. I recognised his wife. She was being treated for cancer, and she said she was really concerned for her husband, the guy who'd raped me. She knew she was dying. She was terminally ill with cancer. And I was able to visit him again one time before he died and went to be the Lord. So no words were exchanged, but he said, thank you for coming over to my side. So I know he's died in peace, and I've got peace. You know, it's hard. If you think about eternity, I thought, how am I going to face all these guys in eternity? And even, you know, women that have been abusive in terms of authority. But God's just given me a peace and said, Jean, let go. Let go. I'm the one who works out perfection. I've got my hand on your life. And eternity, there's no more pain. There's no more tears. There's no more suffering. So I know I've got a bright future. And in the meantime, I'm just going to serve him and love him. But I'm going to be the woman he's created me to be, not the woman a system might have liked me to be.
Yeah, that is an incredibly powerful story. I mean, I don't understand how you're here today talking about those experiences openly, other than to say, you know, you've been set free. You have to have been set free from all those terrible things, because as I've said, so many people are destroyed. Their lives are destroyed. And there were so many key moments when you said during your childhood when these terrible things happened, and they did set you on certain paths, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
And it becomes that, what we call that life script. You know, this is my story. I'm an abuse victim. Well, you know, I must not be worth anything then, because you know, it keeps happening,
yes.
and I don't seem to have any control over it.
Mm.
You know, these are seemingly random things, aren't they, Jean? Mm. I mean, you're just walking home down the road,
yes.
and you're sitting on a bus.
Mm.
And how many millions of people take bus trips every day and nothing happens to them?
Yes.
You know, why
yes.
you, of all the people, you know? And how, I wonder, in your story, how much of these terrible experiences have shaped you to the, yes, they're the person you've become. Have you been able to help other abuse survivors because of your story?
Yes.
That's a piece of this story as well, isn't it?
Yes. In fact, my husband Phil and I were out with a lady yesterday who'd been a victim of abuse. And we've known her for about 23 years. We got a phone call one night to say there was a lady living in a particular area of the city who was suicidal. It was from the Reach organization. And they contacted us because of their links with Christian networks. It was known that we lived the nearest to her. We went out and she'd been drinking heavily and she wanted to end her life. And we stayed with her. She'd given her life to the Lord at 15. Typical, a similar situation to my own. Her parents would go, don't bring that religious nonsense home. Quench the spirit. Anyway, we stayed with her the night. To cut a long story short, I continued to visit her for some 15 years. Heard her story. She was actually, she had an abusive husband. She only started drinking. She was put on Valium, put into a safe home because he threatened to kill her when she was pregnant with their son. He ended up in drink, driving under a bus and was garrotted. She had the most horrendous life. And the way she coped, coming off Valium, she started to drink and she became an alcoholic. And the victim of all sorts of horrendous abuse, including a doctor who abused her. She'd been out drinking with friends. They got home. She was in a bit of a state and they phoned the doctors and her GP wasn't there. Another doctor came out, sent all her friends home and said, leave it to me. I'll see she's all right. He told her to go to bed and he'd give her a sedative. She'd already been drinking for several days. He pumped her with Valium and raped her. She rang me the next day, absolutely distraught. She'd rung the doctor's practice. They didn't believe her. So I said, well, I'll tell you what. God's seen what that man's done and he won't get away with it. So I prayed with her. A couple of years later, she even tried to help him because he went to her with a sob story, knowing what he'd done. He went to her with a sob story. She gave him a Christian book. About he'd been neglected by his mother or put into a boarding school. She gave him a book to read to help him. Anyway, he left the area. A couple of years later, I got a phone call. He'd been caught at a doctor's practice somewhere down south. He was taken away in handcuffs for abusing women. The health authority were on his case, and I was asked would he be there while she gave her testimony to the health authority. The case was heard in private, and he was found guilty. He had one of the top, you know, barristers, private insurance as a medic. And the barrister tried to trip her up about medication. This girl is brilliant. She's got a brilliant mind. The fact that she's had a tough childhood and an abusive ex-husband was nothing. She's bright. And he tried to trip her up and she said, look, I don't do this and take this tablet for that reason. She went right through her medications, told the barrister exactly what she was taking and why. And she said to him, you can question me till the cows come home. That man raped me and he knows he's done it and nothing will change. And yeah, he was found guilty. And she now, for 7 years, it's another long story, but I got a link to a church where she's going on great with God. One of the leaders in that church was on the college course here, Jan. She's one of her pastors, but she's been through hell and high water, being abused, not listened to, and but God is doing a work in her life. She's now putting on Facebook messages about God and God's love. So
wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Love,
I mean,
never fails.
Yeah, it's so hard, isn't it? Because the part of the problem with people who have been abused is, as you say, they're not believed, they're not listened to. And oftentimes, you know, when children are abused, they go to their parents or an authority figure to tell about what's happened, and they're not believed. I mean, I remember a friend of mine, his mother was, he told me when she was a little girl, she was abused, by an uncle, and she went to her mother and told her about her uncle abusing her, and the mother spanked her and said, "That's a terrible lie. Don't say that about your uncle. He would never do that." She spanked her, and of course, the abuse continued.
Yes.
And making it even worse is the fact that, the abuse was happening, it was an ongoing thing, but that two, her mother didn't protect her, didn't stop the abuse, and so it was allowed to continue. And that's, as you say, you use the word trauma, that's almost as traumatic in a way as the abuse, isn't it? You don't have the support. The people that are supposed to protect you, your mother, your father, or whoever, aren't there for you.
Yes.
And it just keeps happening. You know, it's a terrible, terrible thing.
And I think, you know, what's blessed me is in our nation, there's so much of it gone on in this nation. And it's blessed me, blessed my heart to see the exposure of it. People in authority, you know, public figures who you'd expect to be living different lives who haven't. And it is marvellous to see it uncovered. And I guess within the church, there's got to be more compassion. There've got to be safe places. Because I've watched documentaries of people who've shared their stories of abuse, but they're still victims, because for me, only God can heal. You know, we can get counselling and we can get coping mechanisms, but actually, God is the divine healer. You know, Jesus, by his stripes we are healed. Well, I can tell you, by his stripes I have been healed. And I did the... Phil and I went to Jerusalem. We had a trip to Israel, and walking through the streets of Jerusalem, what they call the Via della Rosa, the Way of the Cross, and imagining how Jesus was ridiculed and spat at, and he was crucified naked. I mean, we see him with a loincloth, but actually he was naked. He was stripped naked. And that was a partial recognition for me. When we did that, I thought, gosh, he's been through what I've been through. But because I was still locked by abuse, it's taken all this time for God to really get to the bottom of the abuse. There's a root somewhere in all of us that makes us vulnerable. And I do think authority, it's a massive thing. And thinking about Adam and Eve, what was the devil's goal? He wanted authority. He railed up against God, who is the supreme authority, but who is love. And what does he do? He manifests authority in exactly the opposite way. He can't do anything new under the sun. And I just hope and pray that in our church globally, we'll see more, to the extent we've seen the authority abused. I pray that we'll see more of God's love. God is authority, but God is love. And love hopes, love believes, love endures. And I just hope and pray we'll see a massive move of healing, not only in this nation, but in America. I know little about America. I pick up bits. But you see hurting people all over the globe. There's massive unrest in our world today. And we've got a wonderful healer who can make a difference.
That's true. Well, Jean, I am so thankful. We're running a bit out of time. I'm so thankful that you decided to come down today. There's always a reason why these things happen for some reason. There's a reason why that podcast didn't work out before.
Yes.
But this, I think, has been so much better because we've gotten into some really, really tough topics. And I think one of the things I would say, just kind of wrapping up, I mean, I don't think you're saying that God, you know, God can heal anybody. There's no doubt about it. But physically, emotionally, or whatever we're talking about. But we're not saying if you're a sexual abuse survivor, you know, just pray a quick prayer and it'll all go away.
No.
You know, I want to say that because I know that's not what you're saying.
No.
There's always a danger of overly spiritualizing anything.
Yes.
You know, I have a problem and I prayed and now it's gone. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. You know, there's like emotional issues, spiritual issues, things that are deeply rooted in our experiences, especially when we're children. You know, isn't it true that that life script kind of gets written and then we sort of live that out? And if we're not, we have to go back and deal with those deep rooted issues and problems in our lives. And, you know, just praying a prayer isn't going to fix everything, is it?
No. I mean, it's been a lifetime's journey for me. From I was 5 till how old I am now, which
we won't
I'm not
ask.
Say. It's a long time. So I've been on a journey. So if you're out there and you've been abused, I just pray that, God will bring people along your path who can help you. Trust him, because he sees and he knows. As Clint has said, there's no quick fix. It's been a painful journey. A couple of times I wanted to end my own life, and thank God, you know, he's put people on my path who've just encouraged me. And I think the bottom line is, you know, we can maybe expect too much of others. We can see life through rose-coloured glasses. It's tough. Life is tough. And challenges don't go away. But we can encourage one another. And I pray that if you're listening to this and you've got a problem, God will put someone along your path. You'll have a journey of healing where people can come alongside you, can encourage you. And he does it in the most unusual ways. I never thought I would ever do a degree course. And it's been a mega milestone in my healing, in my personal development, becoming the person I am today, who is still on a journey. So we're all on a journey. But if you're hurting and if you've been abused, God knows, and I trust and pray that God will put people along your path, and your journey to healing and wholeness might even begin from you hear this podcast.
Yeah, you never know. It's funny, isn't it? Because you're about to graduate now. You're finished your third year.
Yes.
But what's more important, that piece of paper that they're going to, that diploma as you walk across that platform, or the person that you've become in the last three and a half years since you've been around as a student?
Yes.
You know, to me, it's far more important that you've become this person than having a degree.
Oh, yes.
Having a degree is great. It is a milestone, isn't it?
Yes.
But you've become a different person as part of the process, and being around different people, and hopefully they've been encouraging and supportive, which is, again, what the church is supposed to be. So we're the church. We're doing church right
yes,
now.
Yes, absolutely.
What's wrong with that, again?
Yes. And it has been like a mind shift. I mean, this podcast is about mind shift. And, you know, I didn't think I could do a degree. Lots of things I didn't think I could do. And I think, you know, that challenge to believe differently, for our minds to be challenged, to think differently, and to be open. It's not about, it's never about a piece of paper for me. I wanted to know more about God. And in the process, I learned that I could be a better person, that I could be more like Jesus. And it's ongoing, because what God's done in my life is ongoing. And I'm so thankful that my placement church is now my church. And by God's grace, I'm encouraging other people.
And now you're on this podcast.
Yes.
And just think, Gene, if you'd have listened to those voices that said, Gene, you're not smart enough to do this degree, you're not good enough, you don't deserve to be there, you wouldn't be here today, you wouldn't be the person that you've become, by not listening to those voices and saying, no, I'm going to move forward, I'm going to do this, I'm going to live this dream.
Yes.
You know, it's a God-given dream that you're on this journey.
Yes.
So you have to listen. You don't listen to those negative voices. Because there's always a million reasons why we shouldn't do anything.
Yes.
And we can easily listen to those voices and say, well, you know, it probably won't work. I'm probably not smart enough. I probably can't afford it. And it may be true.
Yes.
But who cares? Just keep moving ahead. And you never know where you're going to go, who you're going to meet.
Yes.
The person you're going to become as part of the experience of just simply doing something different, new, pulls you out of the box.
Yes. Yeah. I think actually, you know, just reflecting as we're talking, I think my mum thought all of those things about herself. She did share with me one time she had low self-esteem, and yet she was a very capable woman. From a family of small business people, and my mum had all those business skills. And I think possibly an impartation to me was the things she thought she couldn't be have passed on to me. But God's got a plan for my life, and I'm becoming the person he wants me to be, and there's more.
There's always more.
Yes.
The journey's not over. Well, thank you, Gene Dobson, so much for being a part of this episode of Mind Shift. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you were willing to be vulnerable and open and honest. I know it's difficult to talk about. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy subject, and there's a lot more that we could be saying, but it's very difficult, isn't it? But by being vulnerable, by being open and honest, I'm certain that there's going to be people out there listening who need to hear your story and who are going to be inspired, as you say, and looking for those people that God will put in their path. You know, when I think about in my life, God did put people in my path. I didn't see it not so much at the time, but they kind of acted as father figures for me in very key times in my life when I needed a father. Because my father was physically there, but he was emotionally kind of absent. And we never really connected after I turned about 13, and God put people in my life. So, you know, what you're saying is really true. We have to be open and willing to see those things. Well, thank you, Jean, so much. We are going to finish this episode of Mind Shift. I will say finally at the very end that if you want to get a hold of me, there's a variety of different ways you can do that. You can contact me on Twitter. Follow me there, at Preachers Forum. You can also find me on Instagram, the same name, at Preachers Forum. You can always send me an email, preachersforum@gmail.com, or like my Facebook page, facebook.com/thepreachersforum. Also have a look at my website, preachersforum.com. There's a wide variety of resources available for it's all about critical thinking, about God, the church, and spirituality. And finally, I would say if you are interested in supporting the work of the Preachers Forum podcast and website, you can find me on Patreon and support me for as little as $1 a month. Go to patreon.com/preachersforum, and there's some more information about the vision of the Preachers Forum podcast and what I'm all about. So thanks again for listening into this conversation with Jean Dobson. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Mind Shift right here on the Preachers Forum podcast.